Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley. This is the Red Box podcast featuring the best of my Times Radio show, Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. A bumper show today. I went to the pub, all in the course of journalistic interrogation, obviously. Rishi Sunak launched his Eat Out to Help Out initiative. So I went to a pub about 500 yards from the office to meet Giles Cohen to discuss how the restaurants and pubs of Britain are coping during the pandemic. I also spoke to Harry Shearer from Spinal Tap and The Simpsons about what he would do if he ruled the world. Andrew Jimson, the biographer and historian and writer, on how Donald Trump fits into the great pantheon of US presidents. But we also had a really interesting conversation about cities. Are our city centres dying, and how do we get people to go back into them in the future? Right, where are you right now? And where would you normally be were it not for you know what? Are you at home when you would normally be in a town or city centre? When do you expect to rejoin the rat race? Or might you never go back? That's what's worrying the leaders of some of our biggest cities. And of course, the Prime Minister. Boris Johnson's been urging workers to return to offices from today, helping boost economic activity in towns and cities. But his hopes could well be in vain. There's a survey in the Daily Mail today of Britain's 30 largest firms. It finds only 17% of office-based staff will be heading back to the workplace today. So where does all this leave the UK's city centres, particularly as fears of a second wave start to take hold? Are we about to witness the death of the city centre and of the high street? Well, to discuss, we've got four city leaders to pick over what all this might mean and what our city centres might look like in the future. I'm joined by Rachel Robertson, the Conservative leader of Westminster City Council. Morning, Rachel.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. There you are, Rachel. Excellent. I was going to say, you're geographically the nearest, so in theory, we should be able to hear you most clearly. Keith Aspdon is the Liberal Democrat leader of City of York Council. Morning, Keith.
Good morning.
Susan Aitken, the Scottish National Party leader of Glasgow City Council. Morning, Susan.
Morning.
And the Labour Mayor of Leicester City Council, Sir Peter Salisbury. Morning, Peter.
Good morning.
So I suppose what I'd like to do is ask each of you really in turn, first of all, what would it be like if I came to your city centre right now, and how different is it to how it would have looked, you know, maybe this time last year? Let's start with you, Rachel. What's Westminster looking like right now?
Well, it's certainly busier than it has been over the last few months, but it's clearly not where we were before this happened. You have to bear in mind that Westminster is a city with a quarter of a million residents, but before this, we would have every day a million extra people who come into Westminster to work or to as tourists, to enjoy the nighttime economy. So we're well off that. So although things have picked up a little bit, clearly, as you mentioned in your introduction, without offices going back up to normal, we're a long way below where we would normally be. I mean, for example, in the West End, the statistics show that we're running at about a quarter of normal footfall, so significantly lower than normal.
Quarter of that, I mean, that is a huge drop. Keith, let's head to York. What's York looking like this morning?
similarly, not quite as busy it used to be, in that we're a city that would have 8 million visitors a year and a lot of international tourists, but it is getting busier. I was out and about at the weekend in one of our new pop-up spaces near York Minster, and it was absolutely great to see residents and visitors beginning to come back. And in particular, I'm keen to make sure that they get out and support local and independent businesses that in particular have struggled. But there is definitely going to be work to do, particularly over coming months, to make sure that support goes to the right places so we still have thriving city centres.
Susan, what's Glasgow like this morning? Because obviously a slightly different set of rules about what can and can't open in Scotland and in England. So what would it be like if I was in Glasgow this morning?
It is getting busier. People are coming back to the city centre, there's no question. But yes, I think it's important to see that in Scotland the message is still work at home if you can, which I am doing. And I won't be going back into the city chambers, our equivalent of the town hall, until we are clear that it's safe to do so. I really want to see people back in the city centre. I really want to see a city centre thrive again, but not at the expense of public health. And I can tell you that Glasgow is a city that, you know, we have a history and an understanding of what the impact on an economy can be of early mortality, of long-term chronic illness. That's not something that any local authority wants to have to be dealing with. So we are being a bit more cautious in Scotland, and that's an approach that I support.
And then to Leicester, which obviously has been on the front line of a crackdown on a local lockdown, if you like. Peter Salisbury, what's it like in Leicester right now?
Well, of course, we're a month behind the rest of England, and for us, it's a fairly quiet morning, and I'm hoping soon it'll be building up again. But I think it's worth just remembering that cities have always been subject to change. City centres were changing, and perhaps what we've seen as a result of COVID is perhaps an acceleration of that change. But it does mean that the challenge to us all of making sure that they have a viable future is perhaps accelerated. But I think, you know, they have a very bright future.
What do you mean? What sort of changes do you think have been accelerated? How are our cities changing, and how do you think they'll change in the future?
Well, I mean, certainly it's no longer the case that city centres can just depend on retail as the only thing that that makes them viable. I know all of our four cities have got much more than that, but I think we do recognise that people living in the city centre, people working in the city centre, and people coming for a nighttime economy in the city centre are all important parts of our future as the pattern of retailing changes.
And Rachel Robinson in Westminster, there's also been a lot of talk of shops, big shops being turned into homes. You know, John Lewis, I think, is talking about converting some of its former stores into affordable housing. There's also, you know, there's a huge, and I can see them from looking out the window, there's a huge amount of sort of shiny glass office buildings in London, which are, you know, mostly empty right now. Is it possible that, having seen lots of people on modest incomes being squeezed out of city centres, is it possible that they end up coming back and that actually city centres become places where people live again rather than just shiny office blocks and big shops?
Well, I think it's very important that cities are places that people can live anyway. And that's why, certainly in Westminster, which, as you rightly say, you know, obviously looking out of my window, yes, you can see a lot of offices, but you can also see a lot of housing. And we've got a very big affordable housing programme to ensure that people of all incomes are able to live here. And I think that's an absolute vital thing for all of us, because otherwise our city centres just won't have the vibrancy and the life and the mix that we need them to have. They can't just be offices or retail areas. You know, they need to have the mix. So we have to do everything to make sure that people can afford to live in our city centres. And of course, you know, that will, as we go forward, there may well be a shift in the way people work as a result of this. We can't see exactly yet how that's going to settle, but I think it will certainly mean that there will be some more working from home, and that will have an effect in terms of, you know, the fact that we will be able to, some of the office capacity can be converted into affordable, into housing. But it obviously will also have an impact on our other businesses, on our hospitality. You know, in Westminster, we've got 3,700 licensed premises. That's a huge amount of hospitality industry, which relies on, you know, people, tourists and office workers coming in, as well as the residents. So that's it's a significant issue.
And obviously, theatres are such a big part of what goes on in central London. How devastating is it that they remain closed and could remain closed, and actually many of those theatres may not open again?
It's really devastating. I had a call with all of our leading cultural institutions last week, including all the theatres, the museums, the galleries. As you say, this is a huge part of Westminster's economy and basically what makes the city so special. And clearly it's a huge draw for so many people, bringing them into Westminster, which then obviously spills out into the cafes and restaurants and other areas of the economy. So this has been a really devastating time for the cultural institutions, and clearly they need some certainty around social distancing before they're able to open. They also, what's also very important is for those that are able to reopen, they need to have more people need to have more confidence back using public transport to come into the centre of the city. You know, public transport is safe. People, yes, they're wearing masks, which is absolutely right, but they need to have the confidence to know they can use public transport to come back into the city centre, to go to our museums, to go to our galleries, to go to the theatres that are able to reopen and support those. So I think it's really important.
Susan, in Glasgow, there's obviously a real tension going on here, isn't there? Because we don't want to see the economy, you know, in trouble for months and months on end. And so you want to encourage the confidence for people to go back to spend their money to support those businesses. But then there's also a risk, isn't there, on the sort of the health front, and you don't want to encourage some of the large gatherings that then spark concern about outbreaks.
Yeah, absolutely. We do need to get the balance right here and to go up steadily and carefully. So one of the reasons, for example, that gyms haven't yet opened in Scotland and some other premises that have already opened in England is our schools go back from next week. And that's a huge priority right across the nation. We really want to see the schools get back and get back successfully and safely. And that, of course, then supports people going back to work. But we want to see what impact the schools going back has. Let's take that step first, get that right. And if we don't see an impact in terms of an increased number of cases, if we're able to manage any clusters that might pop up, which we have been able to do in Scotland, the contact tracing seems to have been working very well where the odd cluster has popped up, then we can take the next step and say, right, OK, what do we start opening up next? Gyms and other things that at the moment aren't yet open. But if we, I think, you know, we'll be able to open them sooner if we actually go a little bit more slowly and a little bit more steadily, and making sure that we don't do everything at once with that then potential health impact. But that will then go people's confidence as well. And essentially what we need, you know, Glasgow has a lot of international visitors, a growing number of international visitors. But my focus right now is our own citizens. It's the people of Glasgow, our own residents. I need them to have the confidence to be able to live in the city again. That's not just the city centre. We're a real city of neighbourhoods. We've got a lot of really thriving local high streets as well, which in many ways can potentially benefit if people are staying more close to home. And I think we've seen some, we don't have hard and fast figures, but anecdotally, we've seen some of those local high streets benefit. So in return, and I think Peter was right, we were all rethinking city centres anyway. We all knew that retail was not going to go back to the way it used to be, and that saving the high street, if it means, you know, trying to recreate the high streets of 10, 15 years ago wasn't ever really going to be a successful enterprise. what we need to do is rethink those city centres faster and deliver it faster. So it is about residential, it is about city centre living and the vibrancy that that brings, about repurposing premises. It's about public realm. In Glasgow, it's very much about reducing traffic and the amount of space given over to cars, increasing the space given over to people, again, to make them feel more confident so that they can socially distance, but also just to make the city centre feel safer and more family friendly and a healthier place for people to be, and targeted business support to help other kinds of businesses. And for us in Glasgow, those are Fair Work businesses and social enterprises, for example, maybe move into some of those premises that have been left behind by other businesses that haven't survived this period. So we kind of, it's not reinventing the wheel. I think a lot of city authorities know what we need to do already. Our challenge is to really now accelerate that and get motoring so that we don't have our city centres having a sense of going into decline and then having to pull them back up again. We want to have some continuity and a quick return.
If you like what you're hearing, you can listen to the whole of my Times Radio show, either listen back on the Times Radio app, or you can listen live Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. We'll have more on the episode after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.
Literally, just while we were talking there, Nicola Sturgeon's been tweeting in response to, in fact, some Stephen Flynn, his MP in Aberdeen, some photos of people, quite large groups of people gathering over the weekend, enjoying the city centre nightlife, I think it's fair to say. But Nicola Sturgeon's saying COVID remains a real and present threat to our health and well-being. Scenes like these are dangerous and could easily result in pubs being closed again, which no one wants. We all have a responsibility here. Please, please, everybody. Is it keep the hide? Is that how I pronounce it properly, this new slogan that Nicola Sturgeon is using in Scotland?
Keep the heat.
Keep the heat. Which is basically stay calm, isn't it?
Stay calm, essentially, yeah. Yeah, let's all... It's the Scottish version of keep calm and carry on, I suppose. Keep the heat. Yeah, and what she says is absolutely right. You know, there does appear to have been a cluster connected to a pub in Aberdeen, and not just Aberdeen, I'm not picking on that one, others in the greater Glasgow, the kind of metropolitan area, one in Glasgow as well. I think the worst thing is, and this goes back to the pace, opening things up and then having to shut them back down again, that's the worst kind of thing that can happen. It'd be better to wait a wee bit longer and then open things up, and they can open up safely and successfully and give people that confidence. And we have that sense of momentum of easing out of lockdown rather than fits and starts. Having said that, we're all dealing with something that is enormously challenging here, and we may well have to take some backward steps at some point. But the message to people to behave themselves and follow the rules and keep the heat no matter where you are in the United Kingdom is really important.
Peter Salisbury in Leicester, you're also on the front line of the sort of one step forwards, two step drops back approach, and the how is that going down in Leicester? To are people in Leicester looking at the rest of the country and thinking, oh, you know, it's a bit unfair, or are they, you know, are they worried about what's going on in the city?
I think they were worried and a bit cross, because I think the rather more targeted approach that's now being done, for example, in the northwest of England, is something that would have been better had it been applied to Leicester from the start. But, you know, we're looking forward, and we look forward with confidence. But I just wanted to come back really to what Susan was saying there, because see, I've seen what they've been doing in Glasgow before the lockdown, in terms of creating quality public space. And particularly reclaiming some of that space from the motor car, reclaiming it for people who are walking and cycling. We've done it in Glasgow, we're doing it here in Leicester. And I think, making our city centres civilised places where people can be relaxed and can move around and don't need to be dodging the cars all the time is certainly something where, we've got still work to do, and we're doing it beforehand, and I think are wanting to do it now. I was looking, for example, at a picture just yesterday, actually, Keith, of York, and somebody was saying, they were showing a pedestrianised street, and the joke was, taking out the car had killed the city centre. Well, actually, it obviously had, because, York looked beautiful in the sunshine with so many people walking about it freely and feeling confident and comfortable in the historic city. And, I think there are lessons there for all of us that actually investing in the public space in our cities is vitally important to ensure their longer term viability.
Is that your experience, Keith, the by taking the cars off the road, it's improved with the town centre? I declare this, I have an interest in this, because the town where I live, they've just voted last week to shut to pedestrianise the town centre temporarily, they say, to try and give people more space right now with social distancing. But lots of people think it might become permanent. So has it proved a good thing in York, Keith?
For me, it's really important to get that balance right. So in York, we've got one of the largest pedestrianised zones in Europe as it stands. And obviously, we're looking for opportunities to improve that and increase it, to give people confidence as they're in and around the city centre, but equally looking at how we can support those to park outside of the inner ring road and to walk and cycle in communities and across York. It was Yorkshire Day on Saturday, and we used that as an opportunity to launch quite a few of the city's major attractions like Jorvik and Clifford's Tower. But alongside that, a key worker celebration week. And it's all about trying to gradually build confidence safely for people to return in families and primarily local residents from York and all of our surrounding towns and villages. And we've launched as part of that a tourism recovery plan with an initial £100,000 budget, primarily to get people back feeling safe and confident and absolutely walking, cycling, pedestrianised space, pop-up spaces, hand sanitizer is all part of that effort that I know we'll be doing across our towns and cities across the UK.
So that all bodes well. Of course, it's all going to be right in York, because York's going to be majorly boosted by the House of Lords coming, isn't it? stop laughing. Who's that laughing? Of course, this is an idea that's been floated by Downing Street. How realistic do you think this is, Keith?
I thought it was great that the Prime Minister said he was committed to a government hub in York. And we've got a big development site called York Central. It's got planning permission. We've got £155 million infrastructure budget together. Whether it's a government hub, the House of Lords or the House of Commons or a government department, it's all good in terms of bringing skills and higher paid jobs to York and the North. And I'm a big advocate of decentralisation of government from Westminster and London to elsewhere in the country.
Has anyone from the government actually spoken to you about bringing the House of Lords to York?
So the Cabinet Office have had quite a lot of conversations at official to official level as to whether the site is viable for a relocated parliament hub or government department. So I'm really keen that something is going to happen. They just haven't yet finally decided what.
Well, you're going to need more space now that Ian Botham and Boris Johnson's brother are also in the House of Lords. Just finally, then, the last 5 minutes or so that we've got, what do you think cities look like in the next 5 years? How radically different? You know, it sounds like, progress was being made on changing cities, but, you know, the coronavirus might have accelerated it. What will city centres look like in the next 5 years? I'll ask it each of you. Let's start with you, Rachel, in Westminster.
well, what I would hope that they'll look like, and I think this is a theme that's coming across across all of us, is that they will have, we will be able to grasp this legacy of improved air quality, reducing traffic on our roads, and improve the flexibility and the ability for people to walk and cycle around our cities and make them much better places to live. We know, you know, in Westminster, and I'm sure it's the same in all of these other cities, that air quality is one of the top issues of our residents. And I think what this has given us is a really clear opportunity to capitalize on that and really push much harder and faster. So as well as, you know, I hope in 5 years' time you'll come to Westminster and it'll be a thriving, wonderful city where people are living, but I hope you'll find also that our air quality is much better and that people can move around much more easily in the city.
Fantastic. Susan in Glasgow, how in 5 years, in 30 seconds or so, how different will Glasgow look in 5 years' time?
Less traffic. More people living, working and doing all the things that they want to do in their life in a much smaller space. This idea of the compact city, of being able to do everything you need without having to take long journeys, without having to do a long commute, of people being able to do everything that they want and access public services within that easily accessible, reachable space, which will be healthier for everyone. I think healthier is probably one of the strongest things that needs to come out of this, and an economy that promotes public health and is centred around public health and understanding that that is essential to a thriving economy, and the physical infrastructure and physical space needs to support that.
That's all quite optimistic as well. Keith in York, what will York look like in 5 years?
I would say that York's a city that has reinvented itself over centuries. And I'm very optimistic that we'll do exactly that again. For me, the phrase build back better is important. And really, that's about inclusive growth and clean growth. So getting the right type of jobs, skills and a new way of living to make sure that we have thriving places into the future.
And just finally then, Peter Salisbury, Mayor in Leicester. What will Leicester, I mean, we obviously hope that Leicester gets out of its current problems quickly as well. But what will Leicester look like in 5 years, do you think?
I think people will still be shopping here. I think they'll still be working here. But I think the balance will shift. I think it'll shift to more people being there to live, more people being in the city centre to enjoy the vibrancy of being in a real city centre. And I think the challenge to us, I think, is to manage that change and to make sure that our city centres continue to be places people want to come to for a variety of different reasons, but they want to come to because they're quality places. They're places that are civilised and that are good to visit. And the whole basis of cities is to be civilised places. And I think that we have got a challenge, but I think with all of our cities, we've got an enormous opportunity as well.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box podcast. You can now listen back to my whole show on the Times Radio app, where you can also now listen to all of the Times podcasts, including Red Box 2. Make sure you subscribe and review the Red Box podcast wherever you listen. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.